Going Linux, episode 175, an interview with John O'Bacon. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
And I'm your chief executive minion, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
And in today's episode, an interview with John O'Bacon, the community manager for Ubuntu at Canonical. Larry, Bill's been holding out on us.
Yeah, I know he has. Yeah.
Earlier this month, Bill conducted an interview without us, all by his lonesome. Actually, he did invite me, but I declined.
Yeah, I think there were some scheduling conflicts, or at least that's the excuse that we're using here. We'll stick with that, right? Right, Bill?
Yeah. I didn't want Jono to be nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was really nervous about you coming on talking to him, Tom.
Yeah.
You know, Jono's a really nice guy.
Yeah. He sure seemed it from the interview.
Yeah, I've listened to it, and he sounds really nice.
Yeah. We addressed, users being critical of Ubuntu's decision to use Unity, and we discussed some of the background about their decision and where they're going in the future. So I think you'll find it interesting. I did.
Yeah, and coincidentally, just as we were beginning the editing on the episode, our friend Nightwise sent us a voice message letting us know that the kind of change that Unity represents really isn't such a bad thing.
Right, and I think Nightwise's message would be an excellent introduction to the interview with John O'Bacon, don't you think?
I think so.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Okay.
Hello, Larry. Hello, Tom. Hey, Bill. Hello, billions of minions. How are you? Nightwise calling from Nightwise.com, and I want to pick up on one of the things you said in the last listener feedback episode about graphical desktop interfaces. I've got a little bit of a controversy for you. Ever since Unity launched, there has been an uproar in the Linux community that they did not want Unity. No, Unity was not what they wanted, and it was totally different, and they didn't understand it, and it wasn't intuitive. And thanks to the introduction of the Unity interface by Ubuntu in 11.04, distributions like Mint had a increased success because of their desktop interface. Okay, GNOME 3 came out also, not really well received by the community. It was different, it doesn't look what they were used to, blah 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 blah. Now, sure, that's okay. Everybody's been distro hopping since and voicing their concerns and their agitations about all of this. And we have seen respawns of dead, unsupported project, like, for example, the GNOME 2 fork that has been released. Now I do ask you the question. Let's go back to Windows 3.1. Yes, I said the W word. When we went from Windows 3.1 to Windows 95, did people say, "Ooh, it's different, we don't like it, change it, change it"? No, we just went with the flow. Okay, agreeable, we didn't have a choice. You can't just ring up Bill Gates and say, "Hey, dude, I don't like this new bar at the bottom. Please change it back to Windows 3.1. But change is the only constant in the rapidly progressing environment that we call computing. I think that clinging to revamping and reforking older, unsupported, dead desktop interfaces is not the way to go forward. It is a sign that we are, or some of us, are growing old. And I'm not above that. I have also complained and moaned and did that other non-PodSafe word about Unity in the beginning. But guess what? I am not above myself to change my mind. With Ubuntu 12.04, like Bill said, Unity has matured. take the My Unity app, make the buttons a little bit smaller, and before you know it, you will be presented by a smooth-looking, but also fast-operationable interface. I like the dash, I like the HUD, and I like the new functionality Unity comes with. What is amazing are the lenses. There are no operating systems or graphical front ends out there that can do what Unity does when it comes to lenses. Direct interaction with other sources of information outside your computer through the same interface as you use to interact with your computer. Let's say, for example, it's not this. You use the same interface to look for files, for applications, and to look for stuff online, which is directly presented to you, not in a browser, but in the interface itself. That is pretty nifty. Now, I must say, Unity still has a little bit of a way to go. That is true. One of the things that I don't really like about the Dash launcher is that if you cannot remember the name of an application, it's kind of hard to find. And at the end, you know, there are a lot of applications out there. So there might be some room for improvement there where you can still list through the applications that you have by category. But in the end, Unity is not as bad. I've got it installed on several systems, and I find myself being drawn to those systems that I've installed Unity on because I like the way it works. I've also recently installed it on my brand spanking new MacBook Air, an 11.6-inch MacBook Air. And even on the small 11.6-inch screen, Unity shines. So it's really worth a try. Don't make your own choices when it comes to this. Don't be forced into a certain camp by a certain distribution. Don't really listen to what other people say about Unity. Don't run with the crowd just to run with the crowd. Make up your own mind, and if you have to change your mind about very heated conversations and things you said about Unity, and you find yourself being wrong, well, give yourself the right to be wrong. It's okay. Give Unity a try in 1204. Don't be an Unity hater because it sounds cool to be a Unity hater. Linux is about choice, and you can have that choice, and you can make that choice, and give Unity a try. Unless, of course, you're old, and then you always want the same. You don't want things to change, and you think these modern-day computers don't really are the same than back in the old days when you went to school and compiled your kernel in the snow, uphill, both ways. Well, you know what I mean. This was Nightwise from the Nightwise.com podcast saying, make your own choices.
Thanks, Nightwise.
And without further ado, Jono Bacon.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, how you doing, Jono?
Good, good, good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your day to give us a quick little interview.
No problem. I got plenty of time, so ask whatever you want.
Okay, well, you might regret that that comment.
Anything. Just give me your worst.
Just want to been wanting to do this interview with you for a while. Ubuntu's always in the news about, you know, the Unity interface, or, you know, they're changing things around. So, first off, for our listeners, can you give us just a quick little overview of what you do for Ubuntu?
Sure. So I work as the Ubuntu community manager at Canonical, and my job is basically to help grow and build an excitable, productive, energized community. It's not a job that I do alone. I have a wonderful team. Five people who work on different parts of the community. So as an example, Daniel Holbach, he works with developers, helping people to package software for Ubuntu. We have George Castro, who works on the cloud, building a community of Juju charmers. We have David Planella and Michael Hall, who are working on growing an app developer community. And then we have Nick Skaggs as well, who is building out a community of testers and building out a QA competence in the community. And my job is really to help define a strategy about where we're going, to manage the team, to ensure that they're all productive, to and to also act as kind of like this middle ground between the business side of Ubuntu with Canonical and how Canonical conducts its business in the community and the community itself. So, you know, part of it is, you know, Canonical has grown significantly as a company. And part of what I do is to ensure that as we grow and we bring in people who don't have a lot of community experience into the company, that we can make sure that those folks are familiar with the culture that we have in Ubuntu and are working within it. So it's kind of a mixed job. It involves team management, it involves strategy. It also involves, you know, I do a lot of work with the community directly as well in terms of focusing on different areas such as QA. App developers is a huge focus right now, things like that.
So, Jono, we all thought you did it all by yourself. Come on now.
No, I'd like to take. I'm happy to take all the credit, but no.
It's, you wrote a book about how to build a community too, didn't you? It's called the what, Art of Community, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, it's I wrote the first edition of the book back in 2008, 2009. It was a bit of a manic time because I'd just moved to the US from my native homeland of England. So I was moving to America, I was getting married, I was releasing an album with my band and then writing this damn book as well. And just if anyone's listening to this and they are interested in writing a book, don't. It's the miserable experience. It's funny because, you know, you spend all this time writing, you know, because I broke it down into, you know, I knew if I was to write 3 pages a day throughout the 6 month period, I'd have it all done in time. And I'm quite disciplined in that regard. I didn't want to leave it all to the last minute because I've done that before. But it's just such a miserable experience. But you get to the end of it and they send you the printed copy and you open it up and you think, ah, yeah. And you feel good for about 6 minutes and then that passes and then you just remember the misery. So, but the second edition just came out a week ago, and the second edition expands significantly in the first edition. It has chapters about managing working community, social media, and I also did interviews with 12 community leaders as well. So there's an interview with Linus Torvalds, who invented Linux, with Mike Shinoda from Linkin Park, Tim O'Reilly, and various other people. So people can find out more at artofcommunityonline.org.
Okay, let's talk about Ubuntu.
Sure.
I'm going to tell you right up front, when the Unity interface first came out, I hated it. But okay, I have to say 12.04 is actually a stellar implementation of Ubuntu, and the Unity has come a long way. They've really polished that. Right. And one of my questions is, why did Ubuntu go with their own interface? I mean, was it a decision that you just didn't like anything out there, or is there a plan behind Unity?
There's a few things at play there. That whole period of the transition to Unity was as you can imagine, quite an interesting time. And the reason for the move to Unity, there's a few different reasons depending on really who you speak to. The decision was primarily made by Mark Shuttleworth. But the rationale behind it, I think, was a shared rationale across a variety of different people. The basic reason was that Ubuntu as a operating system has really had a cultural adjustment in terms of how we build it over the years. You know, back in the early days, back when I joined and many other people joined the Ubuntu community, Ubuntu was a standard Linux distribution project. You know, we basically took everything that upstream produce and we picked out the best bits and we integrated it into a consistent system. And, you know, some people used to throw some barbs at us because we didn't do upstream software development. And those people who threw barbs usually make those assertions because they don't realize how much work is involved in integrating a Linux distribution. It's not just a case of downloading some tarballs and sticking them next to each other in a, you know, on a CD. Integration is a complex job. But that's what we did for many years. The challenge that I think that we faced was while we, I think, had competently built the most popular desktop Linux operating system with Ubuntu. We'd almost reached the limitations of the people we could reach out to. While Linux enthusiasts were well served, it wasn't really serving as well home users, mums and dads, people in schools.
My wife.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's and that was the challenge. And this resonated with me because one of the things that frustrates me at times about the open source community is that we always talk about free software and the licensing around free software and the availability of free software. And if people don't make something 100% free, then people get all bent out of shape about it. But to me, the purest definition of freedom is everybody being able to use software, not just people with a certain level of technical competence. So in our community, I think at times we've had wonderful free software, but you have to be basically a Linux geek to use it. The idea behind Unity was to really build a design competence in terms of making sure that everything that we do in Ubuntu is based around us reaching out to a wider set of people. Now, this doesn't mean leaving behind Linux enthusiasts. Absolutely not. I mean, again, one thing that's important to the critics to realize is that basically everyone who works at Canonical and most people who work on Ubuntu are all Linux enthusiasts. You know, so there is a significant amount of, you know, we're building it for ourselves as well. However, we didn't want to just restrict it to Linux enthusiasts. We want mums and dads and sisters and brothers and whoever else. Very recently, I just installed 1204 on an old Dell laptop for my mother-in-law. And she is, I mean, I love it a bit, but she is absolutely useless when it comes to anything.
We hope that she does not listen to this this interview because you'd be in trouble.
I'm pretty sure she won't be listening to this, put it this way. That involves downloading something from the internet. And But she, you know, and she's done really well with it. I don't think she could have done that a few years back. So there was a period of assessment about how we could move in that direction, how we could build Ubuntu for a wider demographic of people and what our options were. And originally, you know, the goal was absolutely to try and do this within the GNOME project. There was a design sprint with some folks from GNOME and some people at Canonical, and some designs were shared and some discussion was happening. But there was an interest in building an additional shell for GNOME. I mean, Unity was always set out to be another shell for GNOME. It's all based upon the GNOME platform. Most of the applications that we ship in Ubuntu are GNOME applications. But unfortunately, that became more challenging as there was quite a lot of resistance from certain parts of the GNOME community. Unity still really is a shell for GNOME. I mean, some people don't see it that way. Some people compare Unity and GNOME, but in reality, Unity is just a shell and a set of enhancements that you can add to GNOME applications.
Well, I have to say that it has come a long way as far as polish. It looks wonderful. It runs well. I believe it actually uses less memory than the first iteration of it.
Right.
I know there's people that have walked up and can pretty much say, "Hey, that's a Firefox icon. I click it and it starts." And I don't know if you've had these people. They'll start like 12 instances of a
yes,
web browser.
Exactly.
And all they're trying to do is get their stuff done. So if you can make it simpler, you know, for them to use the machine. My wife is a good example. She doesn't quite understand how things work, and they really don't need to understand how it works. Just it works.
Yeah.
What I encourage all our listeners to understand is if you don't like Unity, you can go to Software Center and install just about anything you want.
I think that's the thing. Like one of the things that's one of the reasons why I love Linux and I love free software is that at the end of the day, irrespective of what somebody thinks about Unity or KDE or GNOME or whatever else, there is something out there for everybody. It's funny when I see people, you know, it's been interesting watching like some of the reaction to Unity in the sense that, you know, at first people were very, very, you know, some people were pretty critical.
Pretty?
Yeah. Then there was kind of like this, you know, the that's it, I'm moving to Arch kind of folks. And then that kind of meme came full circle around when it became almost comical for people to say, that's it, I'm moving to Arch. So then it became, that's it, I'm moving to Ubuntu. But it's like, to me, whether you use Ubuntu or whether you use Fedora or whether you use Debian or whether you use FreeBSD, like, it's all free software. And that, to me, is what is fundamentally what counts. Naturally, I want people to be using Ubuntu because I personally think Ubuntu offers the best experience. But even if you want to use Ubuntu and you want to run, you know, GNOME shell in there or KDE or whatever you might want, the thing I love is that you have that choice. Some people, I think, who are critical of, and this is not just Unity, this applies elsewhere, but you get these people who loiter around comment boxes on websites and all they do is complain about a particular piece of software. I think sometimes they forget that, you know, this is free software that people build and people put their hearts and souls into this, and just going and throwing barbs at people isn't productive, it's not helpful. And people who make the same point over and over again, it's less about the point, it's more about them making some kind of assertion that they feel like they need to make. You know, and the thing is, as well as about Unity, it's been an evolution as well. I mean, I think some people, when we first dropped it into Ubuntu, I think some people thought that they were expecting it was going to be perfect, and it absolutely wasn't. And the early versions of Unity, the quality just wasn't there. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that. But there's been an evolution in terms of learning what our users want and fixing those things, and but also quality as well. We invested a lot of time and effort at Canonical in quality in the 1204 cycle. The reason why I think you feel the quality in 1204, where you probably didn't see it in some of the previous releases, is because, I mean, we completely built QA up from scratch in 1204. The beginning of the cycle, there was no automated testing. There was some limited automated testing. We had limited manual testing. We didn't have acceptance criteria before Unity Trunk comes into Ubuntu. So there was quality deficiencies that we really fixed in 1204. And, you know, thanks to Pete Grainer and Nick Skaggs and Rick Spencer and various other people for driving that work.
Well, I will have to say they've done a really great job with 1204. I think they spent a lot of resources really polishing this. And there's people out there that say, you know, that should understand that if they want a rock solid system for now it's 5 years, then they just need to go ahead and stay with the long term support. They don't need to reinstall every 6 months. Yeah. 6 months is for the people to just got to reinstall something just to reinstall it. There's people that also have said, you know, Ubuntu is dumbing it down Linux. And I kind of disagree with them. And here's my philosophy. I always would like to be able to give a disk and say, here, put this in your computer and boot it and follow the instructions, okay? Have it find the wireless and say, okay, you know, this is a proprietary, I found it, do you want me to download it for you and install it? I mean, sometimes you just want things to work. Now, there's some purists that say, you know, we shouldn't have any proprietary drivers, but really, if you stick a DVD into my wife's laptop and it doesn't work, I'm going to be hearing about it.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing about this is that if there's one thing that really ruffles my feathers, is I can't stand elitism in any of its forms, political elitism, technical elitism, social elitism, whatever it might be. I agree where, when some people say, you know, we'd like more configurability in certain parts of Ubuntu. I think that that's reasonable to a certain level. But people who think that Linux is being dumbed down, that is pure elitism. Nothing.
It is.
I mean, and it's people who are basically saying, okay, we have our special operating system that's designed for people like us, that only people like us can use, and we don't want all of those stupid normal people using it. That is ridiculous. I mean, it's like... there's nothing wrong. If people want to have that, they can go and have that. They can download Linux from scratch. Okay. And that's great. And if they want to use that,
we'll see you in 6 months when you get it working.
Well, yeah. And it's, I mean, I have no right to speak for the Ubuntu project. I mean, I'm obviously very involved in Ubuntu. But put it this way, that's not the world I want to see in Ubuntu. I don't want to see a community or an operating system that requires you to have a certain level of technical knowledge to use it, and that wants to focus only specifically on those people, in the same way that I wouldn't want Ubuntu to only focus on men using it, or only on women using it, or only on white people using it. Like, it's any kind of elitism is bad. Like, we should make software that everybody can use, that welcomes everybody, that can be served, that serves everybody well. And to me, there's a difference between software that is focused on serving everybody's needs, but doesn't do it yet. Like I said earlier on, I know that there's some people who are power users who feel like Ubuntu doesn't really serve their needs effectively, and we're working on resolving that. Like 12.04 brought some additional configurability there, and of course you can get things like MyUnity in the software center.
Yeah, I like MyUnity. That's a neat little application. One of the things that has always been one of the things I've enjoyed the most about using Ubuntu is the community itself, as far as the forums. For as many people that use the forums are very well moderated. They're very friendly. They're very approachable. And usually if you have a problem, you can find someone that had the problem and knows how to fix it. And you just really can't buy that type of support anywhere. So you guys do a phenomenal job of keeping that a friendly, approachable place. Because I've been to some forums that, you know, that was read the blanking manual and that was the end of it.
Yeah, no, it's the forums and the credit should really go to the forums council and the forums moderators, because they do a wonderful job. I mean, there's over 1.5 million people registered on the forums, and there's thousands of people logging in there every day. And you know, forums are tough places. It's the Wild West.
Yeah.
It's you know, you get people who are not afraid to share their opinion, and you know, so the moderators really do they do a complex but I think rewarding job, and you know, we all benefit from that, you know, with the discussions that happened on there.
So what's next for Ubuntu?
There's a few areas. There's a few areas that we're really focusing on. So one is cloud. There's been a lot of investment and buzz and focus on Juju and cloud orchestration. So for those people who are unfamiliar with Juju, Juju is basically a technology in which you can orchestrate cloud services really easily. So in the old days, you'd install an image, you know, an operating system image, and then you'd need to go and set up all the various software services that you've got. You know, configure a web server, configure a database, configure a load balancer, make sure they're all working together, make sure the configurations are all set up, all that kind of stuff. Juju is based, some people compare it to apt-get for the cloud. You don't think of it as software or machines, you think of it as services. So you can build very, very comprehensive services in a matter of minutes with Juju. You know, part of this is that, you know, DevOps have an instilled set of knowledge that makes them better people at setting up services than someone such as myself. You know, I have the knowledge of how to set up a web server, but I don't have the battle-hardened experience of how to run a web server. And that's what you look for in any kind of established DevOps or sysadmin. The whole point of Juju is to basically, the technology is basically a way in which DevOps can distill their knowledge and experience into executable software. So when you run a Juju charm, what you're actually running is experience from DevOps that have been distilled into software. So it means that you can get much better installation setup. So Juju is a big focus. Another big focus, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, is the client offerings. So, you know, Ubuntu for a long time has been a desktop and a server. There is a lot of interest in, you know, in Canonical and in the community around Ubuntu on televisions, on phones, and on tablets. And there's two areas of focus right now that a lot of effort is going into, which is one is TV. So we have a team at Canonical who's working on the TV, and they're working with hardware manufacturers to deliver a product that they can deliver on their devices. There's also a lot of focus on convergence as well. So the idea that you can have a phone that is a regular Android phone, and then when you dock it, it turns into an Ubuntu system. I personally think that this is one of the most interesting sides of what we're doing, because I can see that's where the future of particularly the business desktop is going to be.
I don't know about you, but I carry a lot of data on my smartphone. And sometimes it would just be so nice just to be able to dock it and have my desktop there. The days of big desktops, you know, laptops seem to be the rage right now, but they're now going to tablets and phones. I mean, people don't carry cameras anymore. They carry the cell phone because the cell phone cameras are as good as some of the cameras they can buy now.
I agree with you. Like, cell phones are becoming, I mean, people read their news on there, people read books in there, people send, you know, shorter emails from there. It's interesting that the one limitation of cell phones is really the input mechanism. But you know, text to speech is voice recognition, as it's usually known, is where, you know, there's a lot of focus. What I think is going to be interesting with the conversion device is the idea that you can have not only your phone, but you can also have your desktop in your pocket as well. I think that what's going to happen is we're going to see businesses who want to, you know, with their corporate cell phones, they're going to want to give out business desktops, and there'll be access to, you know, internal networks, VPNs, that kind of thing. But for the consumer as well, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if in the future there'll be docks in hotel rooms. So when you're traveling, you know, instead of having to lug around that laptop, you'll just put your cell phone into the dock in your hotel room. There's a keyboard and mouse attached, and you can start working. So, you know, it's I think it's exciting. The great thing as well is that all the investment that Canonical has made in the desktop, in that integration work and Unity and all the rest of it, we get double value out of it, because not only is it a desktop, but we can also deliver it on conversion devices as well.
Well, you need to get right on top of that. Tell Mark Shuttleworth that I'll be more than happy to take any kind of beta products he wants to throw my way.
So would I.
One of the things I did want to bring, is Mark Shuttleworth still kind of backing this with his own finances, or it was Canonical actually making a little bit of money to support this, or is he, you know, because, you know, everybody forgets, everybody complains, but they never seem to say thank you for what people like you and Mark Shuttleworth and your team and the forums team do. They always seem to be negative, but they sometimes forget to say thank you.
Well, in terms of the funding, it's a mixture of funding from Mark. He's still, I guess you could describe him as an angel investor in one way. So he's still pumping money into Canonical. But increasingly, you know, Canonical's making more and more money from the various products and services that it has. It's always difficult because I was joking about this earlier on with my boss. You know, we'll make a chunk of money, and then what we do is we invest it in more staff. You know, so, you know, we're over 500 people at Canonical now. And if we hadn't grown as much, we'd make, I think there'd be more profit. But the vision of and dream of Ubuntu at Canonical is so big that, you know, we just keep hiring more and more people. It's funny because, I mean, I've been working with Mark now for about 6 years, and there is a cult of Mark Shuttleworth naturally in our community. I mean, anyone with that level of visibility, you've got to expect that. But I think that some people, and it's very difficult for me to say this because it will sound like I'm just spinning a line
That's okay, Jono.
What I'm about to tell you, really genuinely, hand on heart, really is the truth. I'm sure some people won't believe me anyway, but he really does, like, the passion and the drive and the vision and commitment to free software that he has not changed at all in the last 6 years. I think the areas and focus and opinions have changed, as is natural with anybody.
Of course.
But he, I'll never forget when I interviewed with him for my job at Canonical.
No pressure there at all.
Yeah, exactly. It was in his kitchen as well.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's.
It was in his kitchen at his flat in London. And I remember interviewing with him, and he was quite intimidating, and he took a few minutes to really emphasize the importance of this job and emphasize the importance of community, which I was already familiar with as an Ubuntu fan. But, you know, he said to me very bluntly, he said, community is critical to the success of Ubuntu and critical to the success of Canonical. Mm-hmm. And he said, we need to know that if you have this position, that you will treat that importance as, you know, with the severity that it needs. To this day, I mean, he's, you know, he's on the community council, he's on the tech board, a lot of people send me emails and copy him in, or send him emails and copy me in, and he responds to pretty much all of them. You know, he responds to community email and comment, and you know, he really cares deeply about the community nature of it. I've seen him, you know, in meetings with some managers where a manager has suggested merely that we compromise on our community values, and he doesn't react well to those kinds of.
I don't think I'd want to be the one bringing that one up.
Yeah, and it's good, because I mean, we need that. But also, you know, one of the things I admire about Mark is that he won't take any prisoners. I mean, if somebody is being rude and disrespectful, then he's not afraid to go and confront them on it. You know, so he's part of the reason, a big chunk of the reason why I'm still at Canonical, apart from, I mean, this is my life, is because of Mark. He is our, this is going to be a bad analogy, but he is our Steve Jobs in the sense that he has that vision and that focus and that direction. But he, you know, he really cements a lot of the values that we have. But the thing that's good is that it trickles down from the top, because, you know, when you have, you know, company meetings and Mark Shuttleworth gets up at the beginning to speak, and he really emphasizes community and he emphasizes free software. You know, it trickles down. It trickles down through the senior execs. It trickles down to the line managers. You know, everybody is quite clear on the importance of community and that it's not something that we're going to compromise on. So,
well, just a few last things. I need you to tell Tom to get off the old 1004 and come into the next century. He won't get off that thing, and he's. So you need to tell him to hurry up and get off that, because he's missing all the good stuff.
Come on, Tom. Where's that? You know, it makes sense.
Well, I can't thank you enough for taking time to talk to us. Say someone comes to you and says, "I want to help. I don't have money like Mark Shuttleworth, but I want to help in the community." How can people get involved in the community and make Ubuntu even better? Do you have any suggestions for these type of people?
Yeah, sure. One of the things that that I'm really proud of about Ubuntu is, you know, 6-7 years ago, when Ubuntu was you know, putting its roots down and starting to build the community. The nature of open source participation was often very technical. You know, you pretty much had to be a programmer, or you had to be very technically orientated to participate. A lot of the work was, it's funny, because back then it was always, you know, We're looking for developers, but if you're not technical, you can write documentation. But to write documentation, you have to write documentation using a system called LaTeX, which is really pretty technical. So it was quite difficult to participate. One of the things that we've worked really hard to do in Ubuntu is to make sure that the community is welcome to everybody, irrespective of your technical experience. And I think by and large that works quite well. So for folks who are interested in participating in Ubuntu, if you are more technically aligned, great areas of interest are going to be obviously software development and packaging. If you're interested in packaging, packaging software, fixing bugs, when someone fixes a bug with a patch or a branch, packaging that up and putting it into Ubuntu. If you want to help with that, then you should email daniel.holbach@ubuntu.com and he can help you get started. If you are interested in another great area of help is going to be in QA. Nick Skaggs, who's on my team, I've made an interesting goal for him in the fact that with each ISO that we release for each milestone, so we're going to release Alpha 1, a 1210 Alpha 1 tomorrow. For each alpha ISO, we have a set of mandatory tests. These are tests that we run to make sure everything's working okay. Mm-hmm. And Nick Skaggs' goal is to make sure that we have mandatory tests covered for every single ISO before we release a milestone. So this requires a lot of community participation. So that's another great area in which people can participate. So that's, people should keep an eye out on the community for that. Nicholas.skaggs@ubuntu.com is the guy to speak to. And then if you're less technical, things like, providing support on the forums, we have a site called askubuntu.com. Go and answering questions there is a great way to participate. Writing documentation is another great way to help. And then also just loco teams, joining your local Ubuntu user group. We have over 150 of them all over the world. Is a great way to help. If there's not one near you, go and set one up. You can go to loco.ubuntu.com to find out more about that. And if anyone's listening to this and they want to help and they haven't figured out a way to help, then email me and I'll figure something out for you. And that's jono@ubuntu.com.
Well, it sounds like there's plenty of ways to keep people busy if they want to help.
There's plenty of things to do.
Well, I know that you're very busy, and I really appreciate you taking this time out to talk to us.
Thank you. Really appreciate you bringing me on. I appreciate that.
And you have a great day. Have some more coffee and tea because it's probably pretty early over there where you are.
Will do.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill. Bye.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.